Welcome to the Better Money, Better World Show, a podcast project of Impact Capital Managers, or ICM. ICM is a group of investors who believe that by solving the world's greatest challenges, we will generate market-leading returns for investors while bending the arc of human history towards sustainability and justice. ICM members have backed companies ranging from Tesla to Coursera to Vital Farms. Collectively, ICM's 100-plus members manage over $90 billion. I'm your host, Daniel Pianco, a co-founder of ICM. My day job is as co-founder of Achieve Partners, a leading investor in education and human capital. Here on Better Money, Better World, we'll explore the stories of our investor members, the companies we're building, and the limited partners allocating money to investors who don't just seek alpha, but also to leverage their capital to build a better world. Welcome to the Better Money, Better World podcast. Excited to have Brian Wayne, co-founder and managing partner of CurvePoint Capital. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Daniel. Excited to be here.
We are excited as well because, you know, we usually do not have debt funds on our show. And we're excited to learn more about kind of the private credit markets, which seem to be all the rage amongst LPs right now. Can you start us off by talking about a classic CurvePoint deal? You know, give us an example, start to finish, how you source the deal, structure it, and what's the outcome so people better understand what a private credit provider does?
Yeah, you got it. It's great to hear that you're hearing from the field that private credit is all the rage. I love to hear that from you. But yeah, I'll talk to you about, we don't really have classic deals per se. The thing with private credit is it has an inherent ability to be flexible in nature and how things are structured and applied, allows for some creativity, especially in climate finance, critically important. But I can walk you through kind of the basics on kind of soup to nuts on something from sourcing through outcomes. Typically, we're looking at opportunities through our kind of deep relationships within the ecosystem. That's really important to us and how we work across the value chain of investors. And so think of venture investors from early stage through growth, and private credit, other private credit managers, and to the extent management teams as well from direct opportunities. So I can give you a particular opportunity that to give you some details on. So a few years back, we invested in a company called Intellihot. Intellihot is a on-demand commercial and industrial scale tankless water heater company. I don't have a particular acronym for that, and maybe we should instead of explaining it all in the title of what the company is. But that said, this was an opportunity from knowing a couple of the equity investors who are large stake equity investors in the business for a period of time, continuing to stay up to date with their portfolio, understanding what is really exciting them within the companies they're investing in and what's tracking really well. In this particular case, we invested alongside a firm called Wave Equity Partners, who's also, I believe, an ICM member.
I believe they are an ICM member, yeah.
And we can always get into how great ICM is and the benefit across all members as a plug for it. That said, talking to them about the opportunity itself, the company had been looking to raise growth equity round. And the purpose of this was really to raise capital, one on just pure growth capital side, expanding distribution teams and others. But really a big bulk of it was on expanding their manufacturing. They're already selling in the marketplace. That's what we like to focus on, is where something's already commercialized and it's for expansion type of capital. And they were looking to raise equity, large chunk, about $50 million. Talking to them, said, well, what if we could do something that's a bit more structured in nature? Some things here are financing. So we did a tremendous amount of diligence with the company, got very comfortable with it, what they were doing, proposed a structure that was a bit of a combination. It was a combination there of term loan and a convertible note for equity kickers and upside, which we like to participate along with the growth of the company. And we brought in a co-investor and took down the entire $50 million so they wouldn't need to raise just an equity round. Is beneficial on both sides. For us, is we could get some pretty interesting asymmetric type of return profile from us having both cash interest component for media DPI at a certain level, some back end on PIC a smaller amount, also a conversion feature that was baked in so we can participate on the growth of the company into the future. On the other side of it, really beneficial to the expansion of that business. They could finance their manufacturing, they could hire more, they had reserve for acquisition capital, and it was very much less dilutive. And what they would have originally been seeking was pure just equity check for the business.
Now, in a case like that, were you sort of the only private credit provider, or did WavePoint and the other equity investors at that point think, hey, we should look at private credit as opposed to just a standard equity round?
No, that was just us. There was some incremental capital. The company equity investors came in because there was some growth capital from us that had come into it, but they didn't participate in that. They're on the equity side specifically. In this case, what we ended up doing was bring in another outside credit investor to co-invest with us because the size of the deal was larger than what we would do for our portfolio. So within this structure, it was purely credit investment.
So our listeners can understand, you are effectively lending money as a lender with perhaps higher interest rates than a bank would charge. And that allows the company to raise less equity capital. So it's less dilutive, but you get some equity kickers. And to translate, that means you get some warrants or options in the company in case things go really well. Is that the right way to think about it?
Exactly. And, you know, within climate, you know, things are physical for the most part. And so within physical hardware manufacturing and others, things can be financeable. And traditionally, it hasn't been an area where the banks have played a significant role. And especially as you're looking at scale up and what the cost of capital is for later stage companies to get to a point where they're cash flow positive or they expand on being cash flow positive, you know, equity might not make sense. Equity might make sense when it's a buyout eventually. But for us, we're financing the operations of the business.
So in this case, IntelliHut is, when you say tankless water heater, that's like a $8,000 to $10,000 device that someone puts in their home, right? So are you effectively financing inventory?
Well, what this company actually does is it's not for home use. They designed a modular system for commercial and industrial scale applications. So think of hotels, multifamily properties, larger needs. And so they're more expensive than that. And so they look at it as, you know, a hotel brand goes in and they're utilizing it to replace their large incumbent giant tank systems that are, you know, on the property. What this does is it reduces an incredible amount of energy consumption, and whereby on dual track, one, reduces the amount of carbon intensity from just lowering the amount of energy needs and consumption for that anywhere between 30 to 50%. It's pretty significant. What that does at the same time is it reduces the cost of operations at the same clip. So therefore, it turns out to have a definitive ROI to that business that is taking this as a product. What we were doing was helping to expand their manufacturing. So they had manufacturing, they needed to expand that manufacturing to service a number of more customers that were looking to fulfill orders. So it's not straight inventory financing, but we're investing at the enterprise. What equity investors typically would do, they invest at the enterprise. We're not doing project finance or off balance sheet. We're looking to, we take on execution and scale up risk and not technology risk. That's more for equity and earlier stage investors.
So then, Brian, can you walk us through the return profile that you're looking at? So let's just say, what's the upfront cost? You take it points at closing. Like, how do you think about your sort of first or cash return and then sort of that equity kicker you discussed earlier?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's fairly nuanced. I won't get into the specifics on this particular company just from confidentiality purposes. But generally, what we look at is what the company needs, how we can be flexible around that to get our types of return expectations. And it's really a conversation around, are we getting paid enough for our risk and the potential downside that can come from us? What we're looking for first and foremost is to get paid back our money. But in addition to that, be paid interest along the way, and also have a potential for equity upside based on the success of the business. Now, from a cost of capital perspective, it's cheaper than equity, really due to the implied dilution in future value of a business. And so since we're taking less, it's less implied dilution on a company due to just us having options, then the cost of capital, say, could be in the range of 20 to 25% versus equity traditionally could be 30 to 40% or more. And from an initial type of cost perspective, it also can be less expensive. Part of that is, depending on the scale, we're in later stage companies. If there is an advisor that's helping to structure a deal, say on an equity deal, they may be taking a large percentage for their advisement fee. It's much less when you're talking about debt structuring. And so that type of cost that's embedded in a transaction is much less. We have various levers and flexibility on doing things for types of fees. Like we could put things in place where it's a back-end type of MOIC. So it's just a money on invested cap, multiple on invested capital that the company contractually owns us, net of interest, amortization, or other fees that are paid over time, just for us to have a understanding of what our return expectations are contractually. Makes it a lot more simple in some cases. Or we'll have some type of small upfront fee to cover costs relating to legal and those type of expenses.
So effectively, you know, if you're looking at a 20 to 25% yield with some protection versus a venture investor who might be looking for something more in the neighborhood of like a 30 plus percent kind of IRR. Is that the right way to think about it?
Yeah, generally, when I was talking about 20, 25%, I was talking about cost, like overall cost of capital on finance, not specifically yield. Yield is going to be much a bit lower than that. I was talking about total all-in cost.
So that'll include the interest, the MOIC hurdle you mentioned, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then equity upside through participation if we're doing a conversion or we have equity, that's implied in that total return. It's not 20, 25% yield.
Now the million-dollar question. What makes a credit fund an impact fund?
Well, let's hope this is a billion-dollar question, not a million-dollar question.
Multi-billion-dollar question. Have at it, Brian.
There's a lot of different ways, and it's really on intentionality, on what you're trying to achieve. And if it is an alignment of interest with all the other stakeholders and other investors and the company, and seeking certain types of outcomes on the impact front. We're financial investors first, but everything that we look at has a definitive outcome to it on the impact side of things. So when we look at that, we say, we understand the full life cycle assessment of a business on understanding, typically it's on carbon emissions or GHG emissions. What we're seeking to do is really trying to find good outcomes first from a business perspective. We just like good unit economic businesses, but those businesses, like example of Intellihot, great business. They had a full-in replacement for incumbent systems for water tanks. This is not a sexy business. And what they did was there's a definitive ROI to it. So it ultimately makes better economic sense to the end consumer over a time horizon where there's a payback period for their type of application because you're reducing the amount of energy consumption. So we look at that and say, wow, if we can allocate capital into this business and we're doing it in lockstep with revenue growth, we can see that it's successful in decarbonizing the footprint of a hotel chain or other. And we track that in a number of different ways. So our intentionality behind it is to understand definitively what type of outcomes from an impact and climate perspective there are. We'll usually work with companies to identify two or three impact KPIs that we actually will put and agree upon and put in our loan documents with the borrower. Now, they're affirmative covenants. They're not negative covenants. This is just basically to have a general understanding that company will provide us with certain KPIs. If it's the amount of, you know, installed solar mounting systems over a certain period of time, and we can understand how that translates to installed solar, which then turns into how it's decarbonizing the grid, and we can measure that over time and understand our impact is growing alongside it.
Does that mean you're backing it different? So that means that effectively the portfolio company has to affirmatively adopt, you know, that, hey, we're in the space where we're having this impact, but you're not asking for specific contractual obligations to do that.
We're not. We've evaluated that, but again, our first and foremost priority is to be fiduciaries and understand that from a risk and return perspective, we are getting paid appropriately. Now, we're evaluating both ESG risks through the business operations and externalities. And we're also looking at what can be from a positive impact from their operations across scope emissions. And so those are the types of companies that we're identifying. So that's already embedded into the DNA of the company and embedded into the DNA and how we invest.
Can you talk about like a deal you looked at where you loved the credit, but maybe passed on the because it didn't hit the impact, or sort of like a tweener deal? And you don't have to mention any names. We won't be taking names on this one, but just an example of when you said, hey, this is good credit, but you know, it doesn't hit the impact threshold.
Sure. There's been some instances of that. And it's a hard pill to swallow just because we love the business and the unit economics of the business and it's growing, but there are certain things in, say, that comes out in the life cycle assessment and our due diligence on the impact side that didn't net up. There's a bit of it. It's certainly art and science when it comes to this. We use certain frameworks to help guide us think through, you know, the climate outcomes. But at the end of the day, we can't have something that we feel strongly that negates some of our thesis. There's been a few examples of that. It usually gets, you know, flushed out pretty early on in the process of us, you know, evaluating before we get into diligence. But there was an example that I can think of is there's a company quite late stage. They've had several institutional rounds of financing. They were making alternative types of biodegradable materials for various input market segments. They were using anaerobic digestion through the use of methane. Part of that was captured methane, but to supplement what they needed for as they continued to expand to commercial size facilities, they were using off-grid or piped in methane, which negated some of the outcome altogether because they were just using effectively natural gas for the input to their operations. And even though in the future they were looking to expand to have co-location on things where they were doing, you know, methane capture to utilize that, it was really difficult for us to get comfortable with that as a question mark.
You mentioned you do a life cycle review. Tell me about that. And it sounds like you're almost looking for scope 2, scope 3 type depth when you're doing that analysis.
We're not doing it ourselves. We don't have a team of scientists and PhDs and others that are helping on it. We're leveraging third-party resources. In some cases, we're leveraging the company, depending on their stage. They've already had life cycle analysis performed on their business. And so we'll evaluate through that the diligence process and make our own assessment on that and have a series of follow-up questions or bring in outside experts to help with that. Or if there hasn't been any, we will bring in a third-party service provider to run a life cycle assessment on the business. So we do get quite deep to really just understand the full value chain as it relates to the impact.
You talked earlier about sort of the ecosystem that you operate in, and you gave a shout out to ICM. Could you talk about what that means? Because on your, you know, when I looked at the deals you've been doing, they range from, you know, small guys like Waypoint or sort of like Venture-y to kind of very large funds that are more buyout-y. So talk to me about the ecosystem that you want to, every fund that you want to know your name, who are they and what do they look like?
I mean, I look at this industry within impact, within climate, I mean, it's a team sport. It's incredibly important to have collaboration. There needs to be multiple stakeholders that are aligned on certain outcomes, both financially and from an impact perspective. And so we look, again, really just the full value chain of investors. So from early stage to understand what is really working within climate, the successes on a number of early stage venture firms that have portfolio companies that fit within our thesis, and how we can partner and help support those companies as they get to expansion scale. And a lot of them will mature. And so we'll develop long-seeded relationships, both on the investor side for earlier stage investors and with companies. We'll start engaging 1 to 2 years before it's our place or an appropriate time for our type of finance. On the other side of it, we'll look at, things on growth stage. Growth stage is where we really participate, and that's for supporting on companies as they continue to scale up. And later stage on the buyout, we're always looking at what's the exit opportunity here from our entry point. So that can come in a few different ways. Come from us just being refinanced out. So if they've gotten to a heightened level of profitability, and now they can tap into more traditional type of either private credit or banking financing mechanisms, then absolutely. And then we can get refinanced and paid back. Or if it comes in different ways, a lot of times it's M&A, strategic acquisition, less so on the public side of the markets. So, IPO markets has been a bit far off in the last few years, but there's a number of different pathways for us. And we want to engage across that value chain and encourage collaboration in different ways. And it's a two-way street. I mean, we deal sharing, opportunity, thought leadership is a great and importance for us to exchange all of that. ICM, again, is one way that they do a tremendous job in collaborating that type of ecosystem and community for that purpose.
Do you have sort of like minimum revenue or other kind of thresholds that you can give people, say, hey, a deal's got to have this minimum or this maximum, kind of the ranges you talk to people about?
Yeah, so it really, it depends on the business model, but we want to see that there's commercial scale here in businesses. So part of what commercial scale does and what that could look like, we're talking, at least $10 million of annual revenue that could go up to in the hundreds of millions. It's really dependent on what type and what place and what structure that we're putting in. So we're fairly stage agnostic, but stage agnostic past technology risk. We don't want to take technology risk, really suited for earlier stage equity investors. And they're very good at that. We want to help expand. So yeah, typically what that does also from having a certain, double digit million revenue, we can dive into really a diversity of customers with them. So that's part of our diligence on really having customer calls and understanding, how this fits into their supply chain for their particular businesses. And so we can really drive to say, okay, this is an early stage endeavor. They only have one. They only have some committed MOUs. No, we want to see that it's already been commercialized and it's out in the market.
That makes a ton of sense. So and at that level, you probably also, they start having metrics like impact metrics and other things that you can track. So like, is there, as you think about talking to your limited partners, what metrics are you telling your limited partners you're tracking both impact, but also kind of financial?
Yeah, I mean, there's from an impact side of things, big evaluation on GHG emissions or carbon equivalency. And so those can come in different forms. It can be in the form of energy savings from the end consumer or business from the product sold, which then in turn has GHG emission reductions. Another example is through mitigated waste. We did a waste to value company in the past, and they were taking municipal waste and diverting the non-recyclable waste, and they had a system to turn that as a byproduct into ethanol and methanol that went to sustainable aviation. And so what that did was it mitigated what would be otherwise landfill, which within itself creates more GHG emissions, degradation of land, and other types of externalities on the negative impact side. And so these are things that we track, and we bring it all together holistically at both a company level on a deal by deal basis to really understand how each are having positive impacts and how we're tracking it. But then at a portfolio level, we bring all of those things together for our investors.
That's great. And you know, one of the things you spun out of Aegon, which is sort of a big Dutch insurer. Would love to hear that story and then how it influences the types of deals you do today.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started this investment strategy. It was previously at Aegon Asset Management. Aegon Asset Management, very large insurance-owned asset manager, owned Aegon Group as the parent company out of the Netherlands. So my partners and I were a part of Aegon Asset Management previously before CurvePoint. We developed and started internally, organically, a investment program called Aegon Climate Capital back in 2019. And this was on the exact same investment philosophy and thesis. There's a capital gap in, you hear this term a lot, missing middle, but it's real, especially in hardware or infrastructure or others. And we looked at it and saying, well, beyond infrastructure, which is critically important, and you know, early stage infrastructure, there's also a lot of these companies have financing needs at the enterprise. So for example, when it's a manufacturing business, they're making widgets of something. And those things just need to be expanded. That's not like a first of a kind facility on a new technology. That's just, you know, financing equipment, financing other aspects of the business, which just hadn't really been there at a certain sophisticated or scaled level. And it's a bit fragmented. And so we said, there's an incredible opportunity, both from us trying to create good investment outcomes for our investors, but also to service the market to help scale and grow impact. So we created that program. We were seeded with capital. We raised capital there and we deployed over effectively a 5-year period. Essentially, when it came down to it, at early 2024, so earlier this year, my partners and I, we negotiated and proactively approached to spin out of Aegon to create our own independent entity. We looked at it and said, there is a massive opportunity here. We really want to be fully entrepreneurial and scale up this business. And Aegon is tremendous and great at a number of their core businesses. Core business, high yield fixed income, commercial mortgage loans, real estate. A lot of these things they have tens of billions of dollars in. We weren't a core business. So it said, well, if we really want to accelerate our success and our impact, do we really want to wait 2, 3, 4 years to get to a certain scale that we're going to be happy with? And so we said, no, let's go and do this out on our own, but do it in an amicable fashion. So it was an amicable spin out, which was great. We retained a relationship with Aegon for after we left and created CurvePoint.
That's a wonderful outcome. And sort of you are shooting your shot right now with CurvePoint. Be curious if you could look back and, you know, as we close, we always like to ask the successful fund managers like yourself, you know, if you could go back and give advice to someone who wanted to fill that missing middle with capital that you described earlier, what would you advise them to do if they were, say, graduating from an MBA school or looking to get into the space?
I mean, that's a great question. I'd say it's being open-minded, think creatively, try and hone certain types of skills as a foundation. They could be finance or operations. So within, you know, a company itself, could be large scale, could be a startup that's servicing within a particular industry that interfaces with some large areas within climate, say the built environment or energy resources. But one of those two things are really important. The other part of it is, you know, we come from institutional backgrounds. And so a lot of that also adheres to, you know, how we invest. You know, from a private credit standpoint, it's quite a different animal than venture capital. And so thinking about structuring and thinking about downside, thinking about, you know, the legal aspects of it, it's quite different. That's where my partners and I all honed our skills over the years, is from an institutional background. I'd say that, you know, really, it depends if it's someone really early in their career. I'd also say that, you know, the most important thing is relationships. And understanding the importance of that, but true relationships, not transactional Knowledge and skills can be learned, but trust must be earned. So those are things that are always really important to try and be collaborative, to see where you can help or where you can learn from people who are open to teaching.
That's great. So get a real job and make good friends with people who you're going to work with forever. To summarize, so great to have you on the podcast. I think private credit is such an underrepresented part of the impact ecosystem. So really happy to have you on and all that you're doing to build your firm and fill that missing middle for climate investing.
Thank you for being such a collaborative partner.
Thanks for listening to Better Money, Better World, a podcast project of Achieve Partners and Impact Capital Managers. If you enjoyed today's conversation and want to learn more about how investing for impact is driving returns, come visit us at www.impactcapitalmanagers.com.